Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to understand what is occurring behind the headlines, while looking to how these events will influence our world over the next 10 to 15 years. Then during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms, using evidence and reason, since His is the lone credible and trustworthy voice in a very troubled world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. We'd like to turn first to a story that came out of Kabul, Afghanistan. It begins by saying that this was another bad day for girls in Afghanistan. Four girls aged 5 to 8 were at a wedding in the southern Helmand province. They went out to fetch some water from a hand pump, and they were carrying the buckets of water back. One of the girls stepped on a bomb, which exploded and killed all of them. There are two interesting insights there. Imagine living in a place where there is no running water. You know, if there is no running water, there is no bathroom in your home. There's no toilet in the home. You know, you're not living in a home where you can take a bath, you can use the toilet. You know, chances are in a place where there is no running water, where you have to go to a well, you're using what man used back in the Stone Age, a hole in the ground. You want to take a bath, you go to the local stream, which in a community like this would be heavily polluted. Imagine a religion that has so influenced its victims that while the whole world has moved on thousands of years beyond where they are in Afghanistan, they still live there. And that we think that we can help them by providing them with military aircraft, automatic weapons, missiles, that this is a way to fix their problems. Also imagine a religion that is so bred on lies that it indoctrinates its suicide bombers and its jihadists to go off and kill others, whether they be Muslims or Christians or agnostics, it does not matter, or Jews. They do matter. They get bonus points for killing Jews. But motivating young men and women to what they would consider to be righteous indignation, justifying being a suicide bomber, to kill non-Muslims and peaceful Muslims under the pretense that these people are killing Muslim women and children. The Shanarif brothers and the United States, the Boston bombers, went off and blew the legs off of individuals and killed the two or three people, in addition to wounding some 200, all based on this myth that the West is targeting and killing Muslim women and children. And yet, these bombs that these little girls stepped on that killed them, mutilated their bodies, were placed there by Muslims. Now, here's a religion that is murdering its own at a rate beyond anything that we can even imagine. Raping little girls, raping Muslim women, and killing them with reckless abandon. And yet, they manage to enrage Muslim boys and girls to go off and kill non-Muslims for doing what Muslims are actually doing, for the very crimes that Muslims are perpetrating. It is the reason that God hates religion. All religion is a bundle of lies used to indoctrinate people so that they react rather than think. this article goes on to say it was another bad day for boys as well. Two schoolboys on their way home, age 10 and 12, also tripped on a roadside bomb, this time in the Sarwarwaz district in eastern Afghanistan, and they were killed as well. Quote, such attacks on civilians and especially on school children shows that the sworn enemies of Afghanistan cannot tolerate seeing our children go to school, said an administrator, Mr. Samim. What a fool. Do you think, I mean, how in the world could anyone think for a moment that a bomb buried in a street, which, by the way, in Afghanistan are not asphalt. They aren't concrete. They aren't stone, even like the Roman Empire being stone. No, they're just dirt. That a bomb buried on a trail or a path in the dirt is an indiscriminate killer. It does not target anyone. It is wholly indiscriminate. What it does, rather than saying that that the fundamentalist Muslims who are planting these bombs, rather than saying that they are targeting children or school children in particular, and that they're trying to keep children from going to school, and that's not their interest. Their interest would be only in keeping girls from going to school. And you're not going to target little girls from going to school at a wedding party. And so the very people who are in the positions of power in Afghanistan trying to deal with this can't process the information. They're incapable of receiving the information and responding to it rationally. That's another consequence of religion. It destroys its victim's ability to be rational. And if you can't be rational, which requires exercising good judgment, you can't be moral, you can't be civil, you can't be just. These are indiscriminate attacks. Now, an indiscriminate attack actually says a great deal. It says that the religion which motivated the attack is fixated on death, that it celebrates death. That's what it says. It says nothing else other than that they consider killing a moral good, and that indiscriminate killing is just fine with them, which says that it's not a matter of who the enemy is, who the opponent is, has nothing really to do with the opponent. When you kill indiscriminately, it means that it has nothing to do with the opponent. So all of the rhetoric that Muslims spout about why this and that and the other deserve the terrorist attack, when you kill indiscriminately, 9/11 was an indiscriminate killing. Boston was an indiscriminate killing. These two bombings in Afghanistan were indiscriminate. When you kill indiscriminately, it says nothing about the victim, but it says a great deal about the perpetrator. They're not able to distinguish. They're not able to discriminate. They're not able to exercise good judgment. Their religion has poisoned them to the point where they cannot function effectively in society. You cannot create a society where people so poisoned can function appropriately. Now that should tell you something else, that you can't fix an Islamic country unless you rid that country first of Islam. The story continues. A recent report by the United Nations officials here found an alarming rise in civilian casualties, particularly among school children, with more than three-fourths of those casualties blamed on attacks or bombs planted by insurgents. Even the United Nations, wallowing in secular humanism and political correctness, is incapable of being judgmental, either that or the journalist, the pretend journalist crafting the article. Now, why are more than three-fourths of the casualties in Afghanistan civilian? As a matter of fact, what you could do in Afghanistan, you could use the old Yogi Berra line that where Yogi said, you know, over 90% of putts that come up short don't go in. Well, yeah, over three quarters of the deaths caused by bombs in Afghanistan have killed civilians. What? That's all there are? I mean, when the United States invaded Iraq, under the pretenses of battling Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard and his great army, they never fought. They never engaged. Yeah, there may have been up to somewhere between 0 and 5 American soldiers who actually died in a conflict with the Iraqi military. And even that is suspect. All the rest were killed by civilians. You know, when the enemy is a religion, it's not armies that typically kill. It's not armies that typically engage. It's civilians. Of course the bombs are killing civilians. That's all there are. You know, the Taliban is not a military unit. It's a religious organization. Of the 3,100 civilian casualties this year alone. So here we are. This was printed in June. 3,100 casualties. That means that over 7,000 people, mostly children, are going to have been killed by bombs planted essentially as mines in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is mining its own people, setting up mines to kill its own people with a high percentage of those they're killing their own children. And of those killed, typically it's about a 10-to-1 ratio of those gravely wounded, losing arms, legs, becoming blind, burned severely so that, you know, that life becomes unbearable. And so if you do the math under that basis, it's about 80,000 dead or mutilated, mostly children, Muslims killing their own. How is it that we think that we can fix that kind of a country? And what was the consequence of our invasion for women? The treatment of women in Afghanistan has become increasingly worse. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll return with another story after the commercial break. I'm your host, Yada. One last thought on the previous story regarding Afghanistan. Speaking of the 3,100 people that have been killed there through early June, which means it'll be over 7,000 to 8,000 people murdered, most of which it says are civilians, all of which are civilians, a very large percentage of which are children. The information is also relevant that this is a 30% increase over the previous year. You know, America is not pulling out of Afghanistan because America prevailed after 12 years. America is pulling out of Afghanistan because there is no way to prevail. We broke Afghanistan. We made it worse. We didn't make it better. And now after making it worse and spilling so much blood, spilling so much coin, we're not only pulling out, but once we leave, it will be as if we had never been there except for the loss of money and blood. This story also continued with was a bad day for the effort to integrate women into the workplace. There were two women in an Afghan's police force, Afghanistan's police force. One of the two was shot and killed about a month ago. The other was shot and killed on this very day. Muslims were also acting badly in Nigeria. Boko Haram stormed a school, surrounding the school. They torched it with the children inside, not only murdering 20 Nigerian Christian students, children, young children. They burned them alive, all while screaming, Allahu Akbar. But you know, Muslims aren't the only people who have lost sight of the fact that killing is wrong, that there's a consequence to killing. You know, when you deal with Yahweh's 10 statements, and you turn to the second of the two tablets, and you're dealing with the seven instructions, and you see as the third of those seven instructions, you should not consistently or habitually kill. It was written in the imperfect, which speaks of an ongoing behavior. And by the way, the word, some Christians twist it and say, oh, it really doesn't say you shouldn't kill, so, you know, we can support our troops. It says you shouldn't commit murder. Now, the Hebrew word is used for both premeditated murder and just for killing. It does not distinguish between the two. So that would be a myth. But here's now the United States. At least 17 people were killed. Now, this is the case. This is murder. This is not killing. While the improvised explosive devices that were accidentally triggered by the young children in Afghanistan would be not premeditated, therefore, in American parlance, like second degree, be homicide, but not murder. So there's no premeditation. You didn't target a particular individual. You know, reckless endangerment, that sort of thing. Well, in the United States, its government, particularly the Obama administration, decides who they want to kill. They make a determination who they want to kill, and then they send drones and fire the rockets on the drones, and they kill the individuals. That's murder. And it's not a case of a one-off, well, we did that and the world is now safe. No, the United States does it with reckless abandon. They make a habit of murder. Well, on this particular murder day, at least 17 people were killed in a suspected U.S. drone strike on a, suspected U.S. drone strike. Who else is flying drones with missiles? Compound in northwest Pakistan, Pakistani officials said, at least two missiles were fired at a house in the tribal region, the deadliest drone attack in Pakistan this year. It was the third such attack since the new prime minister was elected. He demanded an end to all such strikes. So here's Pakistan's elected prime minister saying, you do not have the authorization to fly military missions and send drones over our country and kill our people. You do not have that permission. So what is the United States doing when it flies drones over Pakistan and kills its civilians when they do not have permission to do so? I mean, if this was Israel, can you imagine with the world how the world would be responding to this? Man, how is it that the world isn't clamoring to take Barack Hussein Obama to The Hague to stand trial? He has absolutely no authorization, no justification, no legal standing for murdering these 17 people. And it's not 17 people that stand alone. There are 3,500 people that he has murdered, all for practicing their religion. We'll return to this story, to the Prime Minister's comments about this story, and what the real consequences are in a moment. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. There are some profound thoughts that we ought to be contemplating and debating publicly regarding the use of our drone strikes and the subsequent terrorism in America relative to our war against, well, what are we going to call them? Terrorists? Well, that's a tactic. That doesn't work. Insurgents? Well, they're not insurgents. They're not trying to insurge anything. What are they? Well, they're fundamentalist Muslims. All of them have one thing in common. They're all fundamentalist Muslims. So which means that we are striking at a religion. Now, the government of Pakistan said that the strike violated Pakistan's sovereignty. It did. Why doesn't America care? What if the French decided, because we were spying on their citizens, that they would fly a drone over Dallas and take out a block of homes? How would we respond? So what if it is inappropriate for France to respond to American spying on them and to fly drones over Texas and take out a block of homes? If it's inappropriate, say, for Switzerland to send a missile into Des Moines, Iowa, and kill 3,500 people because in Switzerland they've grown past the religion of Christianity and they think that Christianity is potentially harmful. That is their judgment. They debated it amongst their leadership. They decided that Christianity was harmful and they thought that the best way to fight it was to kill 3,500 Christians by a missile attack. How is that any different than us killing 3,500 Pakistanis with drones and missiles? The Pakistani government said that the strike violated Pakistan's sovereignty. It did. Quote, Pakistan has repeatedly emphasized the importance of bringing an immediate end to the drone strikes, a foreign minister spokesman said. They are counterproductive. They entail the loss of civilian lives, innocent lives, and have human rights and humanitarian implications, end quote. Even if you don't want to be rational, even if you don't want to face the fact that if it is okay for the United States to send a drone in over Pakistani's airspace without their approval to kill Pakistanis that are practicing their religion, that if that's okay, then it's also okay for Syria to send a missile into Brooklyn and kill 3,500 Americans for practicing their religion, because their religion obviously condones killing them. If you're not willing to step out into that bit of logic, then at least recognize that these drone strikes are counterproductive. For every fundamentalist Muslim who is a potential terrorist that is killed by these strikes, 100 more are manufactured. At least pull your head out of the sand and recognize that this was the lesson unlearned from Vietnam. That as we flew bombers over Vietnam and dropped napalm and Agent Orange and bombs of all types, all of the communists needed to do, the Vietnamese needed to do, is point to the sky and said, who is bombing you? Who is burning your children? Who is poisoning your farms and fields? Who is blowing up your homes? Who has invaded your country? All they need to do is point up at the sky. And for every potential communist that we killed, we manufactured 100 sympathizers. It is counterproductive. So even if you can't deal with the logic of, if it's okay for us to do this, it's okay for them to do it to us, realize that it's counterproductive. And when you do things that are counterproductive, you're being stupid. Invading Iraq, giving it to Iran so that Iran could complete its nuclear ambitions and become the leading power broker in the Islamic world, leading to now the Syrian war. That was counterproductive. Invading Afghanistan, breaking what was already a horrid country and place to live, killing people, making the conditions worse for children, only to leave and give it back to the very organization that we knocked out of power, while temporarily pushing them into Pakistan, where they've sought to undermine a nuclear-armed nation. That was counterproductive. It was stupid. Drone strikes are a source of severe tension between the U.S. and Pakistan, this article reads. It is estimated that between 2004 and 2013, CIA drone attacks in Pakistan killed up to 3,500 people. Well, you know, nothing says I am totally moral. What is America's view of itself? Oh, we're the bastion of morality. Well, nothing says I am moral. Nothing says I believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness like murdering 3,500 people whose crime is practicing their religion. How is it Americans think that they're viewed as moral, as they're viewed as holding up to the document that was the Declaration of Liberty, that they are advancing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness when they murder 3,500 people for practicing their religion? Now, I understand it's a horrible religion, but there isn't a good one out there. That's the crime. About 890 of them were civilians. No, not 890. If they killed 3,460, then 3,460 were civilians. We did not kill anyone with these drones that was part of the Pakistani armed forces. They're all civilians. The vast majority of the strikes, the overwhelming preponderance of the strikes, were carried out by the Obama administration. Obama has a God-like desire. One of the things that leaders do who have a God complex is they like to be able to exercise their power over life and death. Being able at his sole discretion to determine who lives and who dies tickles this man's fancy. Earlier this year, Mr. Obama called the strikes part of a legitimate campaign against terrorism, but also pledged a program of greater transparency and stricter targeting rules. Well, where was the transparency? Have you seen any transparency regarding this strike that killed 17 people? So he was lying, wasn't he? But here's the real rub of this, and I want you to think this through with me. So if fundamentalist Muslims are a legitimate target of the U.S. war machine, doesn't that mean that we are at war with Islam? And if we are at war with them, why don't we treat their soldiers, their jihadists, as enemy combatants when they strike back? If we are at war with them, we cannot try them for murder. And if we are not at war with Islam, Obama and the U.S. military leadership need to be put on trial for murder. And those are your two choices. If, in fact, we are at war with the Islamic terrorists and we justify the fact that we can kill them without due process because it is killing in an act of war, then when they strike back, they are enemy combatants, and they're due all of the rights offered by the Geneva Convention. That means when the Shenarif brothers bombed in Boston that they are enemy combatants and that we had absolutely no right whatsoever to try them for murder. They're enemy combatants. It's like you go off to war and you've got guys on both sides and they're killing others. You can't try the soldier when he comes back home, even if he has killed 50 people, for murder, if he is carrying out his killing as part of being at war. So if we're declaring war on the Islamic terrorists, then not only do they have every right to strike back, we have to treat them as enemy combatants. At that point, they're not murderers. Sure, they're killing, but you don't call a soldier. You know, the average German in World War II, he may have been an effective shot in lots of battles and killed lots of people. We don't call that individual soldier a murderer. The same thing would be true here. And if we're not at war with these fundamentalist Muslims, then the Obama administration needs to be put on trial for murder. I mean, those are really your only two options. If you've got another option, call me. Tell me about it. But the moment you declare war on a group of people practicing their religion, then they have the right to strike back. You ought not do that unless you want to grant them the rights to strike back. And even if they struck the first time, the moment you retaliate as an act of war, then it's a whole different set of rules that govern your exchange with them. And if we're not at war with this religion, then our government and our military leaders and the CIA need to be put on trial for murder. Speaking of our intelligence malfeasance, on Tuesday of last week, National Intelligence Director James Clapper apologized for telling Congress in March that the NSA did not have a policy of gathering data on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans. He said in a letter to Dianne Feinstein, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, that his answer had been clearly erroneous, end quote. When you provide testimony to Congress, you are sworn in as a witness. When you're sworn in as a witness and you lie, it's called perjury. Perjury is a crime. Why isn't James Clapper being tried for perjury? If we're not going to try him for perjury, then what right do we have to try anyone in this country for lying under oath? I'm Yada. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Yes, James Clapper would say, you know, I am protecting you, therefore I have, and I work in the intelligence gathering community, so I have a right to lie. So are Americans convinced that the best way to protect them is to deceive them? Is that what we want to tell Americans? That you are best protected when you are deceived?
I guess my question would be, is they're protecting us from an enemy that they've created for us. If we mind our own business and stick to ourselves, nobody cares what we're doing, you know.
Yeah.
It's when you're trying to force democracy on everybody.
Yeah, but think about this. James Clapper is the very fellow that made the decision once it was known for certain that David Headley, the Pakistani-American that was involved in the Mumbai terrorist attacks, he was the scout for those terrorist attacks, when it was known that he was a heroin trafficker and his two wives said that he was plotting a terrorist attack in Mumbai, one that later killed about 170 people, that James Clapper is the fellow that made the decision to give David Headley a job so that David Headley was working for the U.S. government in intelligence. And so when this man made the decision rather to incarcerate this man and to try him on attempted murder and terrorism, to use him and deploy him in this way, why wasn't James Clapper tried as being an accessory to murder? Why was he given this promotion to National Intelligence Director as opposed to being tried for murder? Why isn't he being charged with perjury now? How is it that Americans can try anyone for perjury if you don't try the government officials when they lie under oath to Congress? And if you can't hold someone accountable to false testimony in a court, then what happens to your judicial system? How does a society remain just? You know, and everything falls apart when you do as he has done and when America responds to what he has done in this way. And, of course, he wrote the letter to Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein is the person who deliberately, knowingly lied to the American people about the benefits of PRISM, of the gathering of information on Americans, saying that it was responsible for his incarceration, which is untrue. In fact, Dianne Feinstein knew at the time that the U.S. was deploying and using David Headley to spy on the Pakistanis and on Lakshmi-Taiba.
And yet nobody called him on it.
No one called him on it. I mean, my guess is this is probably the only show that actually took the time over a course of 7 or 8 days to review what actually occurred with the history of David Headley and Dianne Feinstein's justification for prison. Something's seriously wrong with the United States. We've lost our soul somewhere along the way. You cannot have a civil society. You can't be moral under these circumstances. When your national leaders are allowed to lie with impunity, what left? What is there left? When your national leaders are allowed to murder with impunity, where do you go from there? When your national leaders are allowed to bankrupt your country, where do you go from there? But that's where we are. It is stunningly sad where America is, and the realization is that we're just on the brink of collapse from so many self-inflicted wounds. It's going to be like the fall of so many countries before us, where they don't fall because of an external attack. No, they fall because they inflicted suicide. They decomposed from within, becoming rotten. And that's exactly what's going to happen in the United States. On our program tomorrow, and I'm just going to begin a little bit of this, but I do want to dive into this because it's going to be a several show revelation. In USA Today, right after Snowden's release, they produced a very effective piece of journalism. There was a roundtable discussion between a trio of National Security Agency whistleblowers who attempted to do exactly what Snowden had done. They were vastly more senior, Thomas Drake, William Benny, and Kirk Wybee. Vastly more senior. They worked within the agency to correct its behavior, criminal behavior, and outside the agency with Congress and with the media, and got nowhere. We're going to tell that story tomorrow.